Senate Finance will come to order. Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilken, and myself, Senator Green, are here today to have the introductory hearing on Senate Bill 243, the tobacco revenue and those Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation and some potential means, ways to use any of that proceeds for projects here in the state. Cheryl, you're doing the primary presenting today.
Yes.
And I think Dan Fowsky is supposed to be calling in. Oh, and Devin, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Cheryl Frasca, Office of Management and Budget, and with me is Devin Mitchell from the Department of Revenue, and Mike Barnhill from the Department of Law may join us, if he may join us. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this legislation. When we were developing the governor's budget last fall, the Department of Revenue approached us about the potential to refinance the tobacco bonds. And those of you who were in the legislature in the early 2000s may recall the first time that you used the payment stream from the master settlement agreement with tobacco companies to finance some bonds. And there's a fact sheet that should be in your bill files that talks about really a lot of the history of tobacco bonds when they were first used by the legislature to build some capital projects. And at the time that we talked to the Department of Revenue initially, they thought that the amount that could be generated by these bonds would be about $80 million. And so we pushed it a little bit when we put together the governor's budget in terms of proposing that about $90 million be used to finance capital projects for the university. And it was similar in the kinds of projects that the legislature in 2000 and 2001 had decided to use the proceeds for. At that time, you decided to use them for school, university, ports, and harbor projects. So we kept in terms of subject matter in our initial proposal to use the proceeds for university capital projects. And those projects are detailed, are described in the bill, but the technical part of how this actually works is that then in our capital budget itself, you'll see these same projects listed using these tobacco bond proceeds as the revenue source. So that's the tie-in between the legislation that's proposed today and how it actually fits into our capital budget itself. Then as we worked through the discussions with the Department of Revenue, you know, and they're not usually a pretty wild bunch, but they actually came back to us and early in January indicated that, in fact, they thought that the proceeds now that we could generate from the master settlement agreement revenues could almost approach $180 million. So needless to say, we couldn't let an opportunity go unused. And so we were in the process of planning for how to finance the Mat-Su prison that you all had authorized in legislation a couple of years ago. So the second part of the bill was to earmark, if you will, the additional proceeds for the Mat-Su prison. And again, that was back in January when we were working on this. So since then, we have been working on other options for the Mat-Su prison in terms of the lease purchase options that are prescribed in the legislation, Senate Bill 65. And so the additional potential $90 million is still before you in this bill marked for correctional projects, but there could be an opportunity to put that towards the Mat-Su jail or however the committee should recommend. So with that, Devin is here to answer the technical parts of how this work, and with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Other questions? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I may have missed this, forgive me if you already spoke to it, but what is the magnitude of the funds that are liable to be in excess of the $89,250?
Well, when we were working on it, the department indicated it could be up to 180 altogether, so another 90. Okay. But Devin may have more up-to-date information. Mm-hmm. And why, you may be curious as to why, through
sure.
The chair.
Just for the record, Devin Mitchell, Debt Manager, Department of Revenue. And it's really been a moving target as far as how much value can be generated from the sale of this asset. And what drives the target moving is interest rate, its market condition, which includes legal climate. There's some court decisions that have come out. It also involves the master settlement agreement itself, which is adjusted by inflation as well as consumption. And so we have a number of variables that go into the equation. The recent trend in the market has been very favorable. Several years ago, after the 2000 and 2001 series, we entered a period of time in late 02 and 03 and through 04 where you couldn't issue tobacco bonds without pledging additional security because there was that much uncertainty from the market's perspective that they wanted to have some additional backstop. Since that time, we've had a couple of court decisions come out that have been more favorable. We've seen a rebounding in the market, and to the extent that as Cheryl described, we were around $100 million when we first started talking about this in late 2005. That grew to an analysis that there might be up to $140 million available, and then more recently in the high $180 million range. So it will continue to evolve, and I think that was part of the reason for, in the way the legislation was drafted, leaving the secondary funding a little open-ended, how much money might actually be available for other projects besides those specific projects identified for the university.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe you can answer this. What are we anticipating will be the total capital cost for that new prison?
It's in excess of $100 million, and I'm not sure that I've seen the, 120, 130.
And are there any funds available for that project as yet this time?
There's a group of folks working on the financial side of it, and thus far it does not include this particular package.
And when
this
were
is my understanding.
And when were we hoping or anticipating to begin that construction project?
Ms. Cheryl.
Madam Chairman, Senator Dyson, we'd love to be able to turn dirt this summer. Completion will probably be a couple of years. And so, as Senator Green indicated, we are working on the options to finance it. Senate Bill 65 from a couple of years ago allowed for a lease purchase, a relationship between the state and the Mat-Su Borough. And so we're exploring a number of options for financing it, working with AHFC, the borough, Department of Revenue. And so those are very active right now in terms of where to land to get the best deal for the state and the borough. So that's in play. So, but that'll give you a time frame.
And just finally, if we are able to go forward in the magnitude that we're planning, how close will this get us to bringing the prisoners from Arizona home?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dyson, right now the plan is to bring all of them home. And so in the sense that the $30 million that we're spending outside, that will now come and be spent in the Mat-Su Borough in terms of the care of those prisoners. But the challenge will be that we can fill that prison. We're expected to be able to fill that prison up with sentenced felons and those now outside when it opens.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's the good news and the bad news.
Yeah. Thank you for that wonderful news. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I had a couple of things, but first let's stay on the prison. I guess I'm a little surprised that we're going to turn dirt for a prison in Alaska. Have we done, I'm thinking back, where have we had the opportunity to see if that's the right thing to do? I think it's the right thing to do.
Yes, Senate Bill 65 authorized the construction of the prison.
Yeah, I don't remember authorizing the construction, but we have to fund that construction in some way. Have we seen the analysis? And I'm thinking back to Delta, and I'm thinking back to Kenai, and I'm thinking back to, and I don't know if the numbers are right, but a couple of things. The beds at those two prisons, certainly Kenai was $90-some a day, and Arizona was $50-some at the time. So there's a spread there that it's going to cost us to bring the folks home. And so I don't know if we've gone through those numbers. Is it, what does it cost us to build a prison in Mat-Su or anywhere else? And what's the general fund impact? The other thing is, I haven't seen the work. I don't know how big the prison is. Does it affect then communities? Does it affect my community? Do people now leave my community to populate a prison somewhere else? How does Spring Creek run into this? I guess I'm just surprised that we're just going to go off and do a prison and we haven't really analyzed whether that's indeed the right thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do, and I'm okay if that's, if it pencils out, I guess I'm okay, but I'm not quite sure I'm ready to turn dirt.
Senator Wilkin, I don't have everything at my fingertips on the language that was included in that, but as you may recall, we had limits on what the cost per day could be for the prison over a 25-year period, and gave the amount that could be spent per prisoner per day. And we approved that with Senate Bill 65. And we authorized the commissioner, and I think the commissioner of admin, to work with the administration to, through the Mat-Su borough, or if for the Fairbanks component, your borough could come to the state and say, we're ready to help get this going. And the key to this whole thing was local participation, and that you had someone interested in being involved. And we approved the construction with Senate Bill 65. And it's undergone such great scrutiny that more scrutiny than I would have ever chosen, you know, because this should have, you know, quite frankly, been done a year and a half ago, but it was not. And so we're there now still. And believe me, the questions you're asking have been asked repeatedly over and over, but we gave our approval with Senate Bill 65.
Yeah. What does it cost us to bring the prisoners home over the next 20 years? I guess probably that's the first question. Not, we don't have to answer it today, but I mean, I'm not interested in bringing them home if it costs us a lot of money that we could spend somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But if it's neutral or slightly negative, then I guess I'm okay. But I think I don't know about the rest of the committee, but I guess I'd kind of like to see what it's going to cost us to build a prison somewhere in Alaska. And I'm fine with Mat-Su or somewhere else, but I think we ought to at least have that conversation so we know what it's going to cost us before we dig dirt. So I had another, so maybe that's subject for another day.
Okay.
The other thing is, I had two questions. The other is, when the governor rolled out his budget on the 15th, and I saw the securitization, $89 million for University of Alaska projects, I was glad to see that. And was not familiar with the mechanism, but had a sense of what it was. So then I saw the details a few days later, and it was a $55 million grant to UAA to do their, whatever the name of that building is.
Integrated Science.
What is it?
Integrated Science.
Integrated Science, which, you know, I'm fine by that, too. It follows right on to the library. But I was chagrined, and other people were, too, that the Bix building in Fairbanks was just sort of left out. So I would just throw on the table that if we have some extra money coming out of the securitization, and indeed it's for university projects, that I'd like to talk sometime about the Bix building and how we can fund that in some manner, because I think that elevates what they're trying to do in Fairbanks, just like the integrated science elevates what they're trying to do in Anchorage. So I'll just throw that on the table for now. So, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Hoff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions, I guess. And, you know, I've talked to the administration about the number one needed facility in the state of Alaska, and that was Bethel's, and it has been the number one needed correctional facility for 4 or 5 years now, maybe even longer. And and I remember, you know, working with the chairman, Senator Green, on that facility, on the one that's out there in her district, and the other facility was that was mentioned in 65 was the one up in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. I believe that those were the three. But as I recall, Senate Bill 65, it was since the state did not want to get into the debt of the facility, it was those communities needed to work and use Senate Bill 65 as authorization for payment for the construction of correctional facilities. So now we have this bill here, and you know that is a big challenge to get those communities to agree to go into debt for correctional facilities on behalf of the state of Alaska, even though the state of Alaska is backing those, you know, potentially those the bonds or whichever financing scheme that they come up with to have them reimbursed. But now, you know, and that is that's the way that Senate Bill 65 worked. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it did set up a lease finance partnership right. with the local government.
And now today we have this additional funding mechanism, and I'm wondering if this same financing scheme will be available for the other bills, the other facilities that were the state of Alaska was working on in Senate Bill 65.
Let me answer that. Senator Hoffman, as soon as I saw this language in here, mm-hmm. I called Cheryl and the administration and I said, this will not work. This is not going to fund the Mat-Su prison because this takes it right back to what you're doing and saying and what Senator Wilkin is saying right now. We've had the conversation about the prison, about the financing, and how that's to be done. And if you want me to, I will amend this out right now.
No. I don't want well, that
prison. I said this will not work for financing the prison, and the minute I read this, I called the third floor, and I said because that opens it up to a whole new review of prison construction. We've had that conversation, and we passed that legislation.
Right.
This is not going to be used for the Mat-Su prison.
Well, my interest isn't to support or not support this. My interest is to try to follow through and implement the intent of Senate Bill 65. You know, I think that the interest of Alaskans is to get those prisoners back to Alaska so that they have, the whole concept of rehabilitation, part of that is to get them as close to their communities as possible. And, you know, that's why I've been working as hard as I can to try to get the Bethel facility constructed, knowing that it has been the number one priority in the state of Alaska. So, you know, I'm not interested in deleting it or, you know, I'm just trying to follow through with the intent of the needs of the state that have been identified. The other question that I have, I guess, is on the bond, on the bonds, you're looking at expanding the payback from 30 years, and what were the terms or the time frame of the other bonds that we had? I recall 15 years, and if it was 15 years, why are we indebting ourselves for an additional 15 years at this point?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, sounds like we're coming back to the bill before us, but the original bills that were passed didn't authorize leveraging of the security of the revenue stream for a certain period of time. They authorized a sale in exchange for value, and so 40% was sold in 2000, and then an additional 40% of the revenue stream was sold in 2001. And that was sold in exchange for a dollar amount identified by the legislature. And that commitment is in force until the obligations that Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation sold to obtain that money are paid off. So what's being suggested here isn't any different from the legislation that was previously passed. It's an additional sale of that same 80% that we've already seen sales on that do obligate it for a period of time into the future. This is a further obligation into the future. So you're right, when they structured those deals, there's all this uncertainty that I originally described that required a nominal debt service schedule, meaning a required minimum debt service schedule that was 30 years in term, but there was an expected final maturity in the 15-year range.
Well, Madam Chair, I would say that there's a vast difference. They are not identical if you're talking about indebting the state for 15 years versus 30 years. The difference is twice as long. You know, I can't believe that you're saying they're the same. 15-year debt and 30-year debt are completely different. Or are they the same in your eyes?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, you're correct that there could be a distinction based on term. I'm saying the fundamental issue about what you're considering the sale of the asset is the same.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Does, because I sort of had a similar question, is the additional from the 90 to 180 or 170, what is any of that based on changing the length of time of the?
Madam Chair, yes, that will definitely change the length of time. You have, again, what's occurring here is you have a revenue stream that the settlement is considered an asset. The settlement consists of a revenue stream that flows in over a number of years. If that revenue stream is obligated to repayment of $90 million, that's mm-hmm. going to be a much shorter term than if it's $180 million. So there's a balance that can occur. As far as the Department of Revenue is concerned, in our analysis of this opportunity, which is really what this boils down to, is that there, as I said earlier, there wasn't a market for these type of securities just a year and a half ago. And so we have a point in time opportunity. We have low interest rates. We have a fairly favorable environment in which to enter the market, and we have an opportunity to maximize revenues today from a revenue stream, an asset that could go away. I mean, there are possibilities that the MSA might not exist into the future. By selling it, you transfer that risk to investors, and that's one of the key points that you should be aware of when you're considering whether or not you do want to sell it for a period that might be 10 years or a period that might be 20 years, because you might be getting a lot more value by selling for 20 years a revenue stream that only exists for 10.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It brings up quite a few questions, and I'll have to apologize. I'm a little bit behind, certainly on Senate Bill 65, and I was distracted this morning, so I'm not as prepared for today as I would like to be, but just the previous response, I would like to hear a justification of why we securitize these when we are in a position of revenues in excess of our expenditures, and why are we not keeping some of these things on the sideline until such time as that's reversed, when we have a deficit type issue and we're trying to come up with ways to drive capital projects when we're short of funds.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. So there's several reasons for that. I think everybody got the fact sheet that OMB has on their website and was available to the committee today. And so you have, as I described, a point in time opportunity that there's a market which will or is willing to purchase the security that you are going to be offering them that hasn't always existed. So if you wait, you might not have a market at the point in time that you feel that you need to do this. You have a low interest rate environment as well, and so the combination of having a market where there hasn't always been one, a favorable market, the uncertainties of the revenue stream generally under the MSA, and the future of the credits, which really this is a real interesting credit when you start looking at it, because it's comprised of the same companies, regardless of whether the state of Alaska is selling tobacco bonds, the state of New York, or the state of California. They're all the same credit because it's based on payments that are going to come from tobacco producers. And so in the event that some of these tobacco producers go bankrupt or have other problems based on laws that are passed, just recently on the news there was in California a community that doesn't allow people to smoke on the streets anymore. And as that continues, if that trend continues, then you draw your own conclusions about the future of these payments and these companies. In conjunction with that, you have the uncertainty of the court system, where you've seen very large settlements against these corporations that could potentially put them out of business. And like I said, more recently we've had some favorable court rulings that have put that possibility off and have created this rebound in the market. But those are the fundamental reasons that allow us to recommend this as an opportunity for today.
If I could respond, Madam Chairman, I would think that whoever is on the other side of this issue, purchasing things would be reflected in the price they're willing to pay, the generally known risk within the marketplace of potential problems with the tobacco companies paying these income streams. So I would still come back to my initial point of the timing issue, mm-hmm. over with the overall state finances. And if I could, Madam Chair, just to kind of stop there and back up, you know, to the bill at hand. And again, I'm not as up to speed as I would like to be on this particular issue. But looking at line 7 in the title on page 1, getting back to an earlier question, it talks about facilities of the University of Alaska and to finance construction of a correction facility. Isn't that what this bill does, is create a funding source for construction of a, and that's a whole other issue then, should we build it or not build it? I don't have any historical issue there. Question the title, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and you would certainly amend that as well. I mean, because this simply was not ever, when the administration set this up, they were just thinking outside the box, and they said, we could use this to fund the prison facility, because that has been the focus of the conversation for several months, how to finance it. And the minute I saw it, I said, this violates Senate Bill 65, because the borough has to be involved with the financing scheme. This takes the borough out of it. We did Senate Bill 65 so that local government says, we'll pick up a piece of this, we'll be part of it, we'll be with the land, we'll be with the helping with financing, planning, and all those things, and be a partner. And that has to happen before the facility can be built. And therefore, Bethel and Fairbanks have the option of doing that. And I think they're both at various stages of expressing interest. And so, as far as I'm concerned, this was an inappropriate inclusion in this legislation.
Is that your understanding of what we talked about?
Absolutely, Senator. Yeah, if I may, Senator, through the chair, Senator Green is absolutely correct in terms of what the intention of Senate Bill 65 was. At the time we introduced this, we were just laying the mechanism, really, that was our focus to get that before the legislature. Because of the window of opportunity that the Department of Revenue had characterized in terms of the ability to maximize a return to the state from this master settlement agreement. And so we had really focused on the university projects. Senator Wilkins indicated we did forget one that's important to him, but that was the primary focus, was the mechanism. And then we knew that the legislature would have its say in how the proceeds would be used. But Senator Green is absolutely correct that she did come immediately to talk about the relationship of this to the Mat-Su prison.
Any other questions? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. Like Senator Stedman, I am not as informed as I'd like to be, but do you know approximately what the discount rate, the discount is we have to pay to do the, get these guys to take this?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, it'll be a market driven, and I think your comment, as well as Senator Stedman's earlier comments, are well received, that generally the Department of Revenue isn't a huge advocate for the use of debt, especially when we might be in a period of time when we're experiencing a surplus. But this is a, like we've described several times, a point in time that this particular financing does make sense, even with the environment we're in. As far as the discount rate, you're again both on point that this isn't a general obligation type issue of an entity, and so there are going to be higher interest rates. It will be market driven ultimately, but the types of past series, the relationship to a state supported type obligation or a GO type obligation would be, you know, something in the range of maybe 85 basis points. So just over 0.75% higher interest rates than you might be able to achieve through an issuance that would pledge state credit, and you wouldn't transfer the uncertainty of future payments to investors. You would, so that's the cost.
Continue.
Yeah, and I think the most compelling argument is the transfer of risk, you know, and so on. But I assume that this outfit, the tobacco, whatever it is, that they're making money and anticipating they're going to make money doing this over the long haul. And it's a good investment for them. And I guess similar to Senator Stedman's, the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation. Well, wait a minute. So I get
that's actually
that's
the corporation, the public corporation that's going to issue the obligations. And it's a subsidiary of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The people that are going to buy it, there's primarily there's a couple of large institutional buyers. There's a fairly narrow market for these bonds, and so they think they're a good bet, and they've worked out so far. They've made lots of money. I mean, they have performed well. They're taking on that risk, and they have an asset allocation that allows them to take that risk in exchange for that return today.
Yeah. And if I may, so you know, what's their rate of return? Are they making 3-4% on the delta?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I don't know what.
What would you guess?
Well, they're making above market rates versus a comparably rated state security, but they are squarely accepting the risk that accompanies that return, and so I don't think they're being overly compensated for the risk that they've shouldered.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Bundy, then I'll get back to you.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to comment, Senator Dyson's questions remind me of my ongoing frustration with this process. And obviously, we need infrastructure, but we're paying a pretty substantial price to use the money up front. You know, Alaska's like the lottery winner. You can get $30 million if you take it out over 30 years, or you can get $10 million if you take it out all at once. And so we're getting, I don't know, 10 cents on the dollar by selling this future income. And it just seems like a really, like I said, I know we need infrastructure, but it's, in my naive opinion, I suppose, it seems like Louis and Guido are getting a good deal and we're not getting a very good deal.
Okay, and then we, just as a reminder, Dan Fauske's online, and he may be able to answer some of our questions, but Senator Stedman, you go ahead and ask your question, then we'll go to Dan Fauske.
I just have one question, kind of a comment, Madam Chair. It seems like the 85 basis points that was mentioned seems to not be a very large, a little over 0.75% default risk premium. So, and I'm sure there's other issues involved in that. So if that's the spread, I would think that we're not facing a huge default risk issue.
Do you want to comment, Devin?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I think the bonds that were previously issued received investment grade ratings. Whether or not they're going to have issues in the future, I think there is quite a bit of uncertainty that swirls around that, as evidenced by the market going away for several years. There's been a resurgence, and like I said, the market is fairly narrow. There are a fairly finite number of large institutional funds that have huge balances, billions of dollars under management, and they're willing to take this on as to fill a portion of their asset allocation. Whether or not the 85 basis points is a good deal or a bad deal, well, time will tell.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Devin, I'm to understand then that the MSA is not backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government?
That's correct, through the chair.
Okay, thank you.
Dan Fauske, you have some wisdom to offer us today.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Dan Fauske, and for the record, I'm the Vice President of Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation. I know that appears odd, but we did create a subsidiary a number of years ago with the legislative blessing, and what we did was we formed a corporation that was solely responsible for this debt, and it is not a debt of the state or of HFC, and the reward for that was the cash up front and the ability to use that money, and I believe if I'm correct, it was around $300 million that we did in two different issuances, and that the investor was rewarded in the sense that by eliminating any risk or any pledge with your moral or general op of the state or of HFC, the bonds were issued at a higher rate. We were one of the first states to go out with tobacco bonds, and we had a successful return. We were subsequently, prior to that, sued in court here in the state, and that we prevailed in court. The premise of the case was that this was like pledging future tax revenues. Superior Court Judge Hensley viewed that it wasn't, that this was a windfall to the state and would not be viewed in the same light as ad valorem tax or severance tax revenue. I'm saying all this to that, to analyze the cost of these is difficult for Mr. Mitchell or anyone else to do, because they don't compare favorably on paper to any other kind of issuance that a state or an agency such as HFC would normally issue. They are truly a unique market. The market has improved in that several months ago a court case in Chicago was thrown out where a lower court had agreed that a suit, it was in the billions of, like $12 billion was levied against the major tobacco companies. That case has since been thrown out, and since that occurred, there's been a resurgence in this market. Not to support the tobacco industry in any way, they have been successful in making their MSA payments across America. I think Senator Bondi touched on it, or might have alluded to one of, if I have the senator wrong, I apologize, but this was divided up. 80% has gone for these capital costs, these capital facilities, and the first deal was for, I believe, primarily rural schools. The rest has gone Those proceeds roll to the state, and then of that, a piece has been set aside for smoking cessation and many of the ads that you see on TV and public information across the state is funded by the residual MSA payments that are not used to service the debt. If we were to go forward with this, Northern Tobacco, which has been established, would be the issuer, and the state would be the recipient of the proceeds. The original deal that was structured had an anticipated or a rated structure of, I believe, 25 years with an anticipated payout on the bonds of 15 with a turbo provision that we had incorporated into the sale to maximize the exposure time that was out there in anticipation that the MSA payments would be in excess of what the bond requirements were, which is in fact what has been taking place. I hope this has helped a little bit in trying to clear up. The structure is in place. It protects the state. It's just then up to you folks to decide if in fact the money is required and you need it for this particular reason. And I just want to finish with, it is difficult. I commend you on your comments. It's difficult to compare these to the normal bond issuance. They're nothing like them. And there's no way to arrive at something where the comparison of cost of funds is equitable. This is a unique structure, and there is an opportunity here to utilize it again at somewhat favorable rates if that's what the state and you folks decide to do.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. Either you, Dan, or some of the folks here at the table can maybe answer, but setting aside the risk reduction factor, have we calculated what's the net present value of the funding that we are foregoing?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I do not have that in front of me, unless Devin has. I know that the anticipated proceeds can run as high as, I believe, on this refunding, up to $180 million is one of the figures that's been looked at, but I have not calculated it going the other way.
Yeah, I guess I would enjoy it if somebody can do that without a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. You know, a few hours instead of a few weeks of effort. If that can be produced, I'd really appreciate knowing that.
Thank you. Message passed on. Other questions? Any comments? Senator Simmons.
I'm just kind of curious on the intent, what we're doing here today. Are we having a discussion on this, and we're going to bring it back and work it over some more?
This was just the introductory.
Okay, that's fine.
Because Dan Falsky was available via phone, and Cheryl was available to.
If I could, Madam Chair, I would like to have, at some point in time, when we have time, which we don't have much of, the whole policy discussion on the debt of the state. You know, I think some people could make an argument that we have been building up some debt over the last several years, and maybe over the next several we ought to be looking at getting rid of it so we can issue it again sometime when we're a little bit short of capital. Hopefully it won't be for a while.
It's much more fun to incur the debt than it is to repay the debt. I know, yeah, I go to that school. So, but there, that conversation is always a prioritization, and we get back to that every time. If there's, Ms. Frasca.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could, and that's certainly been a priority of this administration to protect the state's bond rating during our first 3 years. And especially as we look to the gas pipeline, we want to be able to have the best rating should we need to incur debt for that. But at the same time, this was a unique opportunity. And that's what I hope you'll consider in terms of the opportunity to maximize this master settlement agreement. It's very unusual debt instrument, and we felt it was an opportunity to use that as opposed to state general funds, which typically are the fund source for the university projects that we propose. So it was a way to save some general funds and at the same time maximize the opportunity that a number of events external to Alaska have presented. So that's why we put this forward for your consideration.
Thank you. And then that gives you time to think of any other questions you might have or discussion you want to have, and we'll certainly do that. Brian Butcher and Mike Strand, you're there to answer questions only?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, very good. Anything else to come for the committee? Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., we will be meeting with Joint Resources to hear from our legislative consultant on the oil and gas tax proposals.
Is it here?
Here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So until then, we are adjourned.